You're listening to the hashtag STR Ask podcast from Stand to Reason. I'm Amy Hall, and I have Greg Kokel here with me, and we're going to respond to the questions that you send in on Twitter with the hashtag STR Ask. And this first one, Greg, I think you're going to like.
Okay.
Here we go. Hi, Greg. This one is from Clive. Hi, Greg. About objective morals, most people think it's okay to torture babies for fun. Abortion. Islam thinks it's okay to murder non-believers. Where's the objective moral value?
Okay, well, just for clarification's sake, I think it's kind of an uncharitable way of characterizing pro-abortion's point of view that they think it's fine to torture babies for fun, okay? For two reasons, I think it's uncharitable. I mean, I think it's mischaracterization, and it's an uncharitable way to put it, and which is not a good idea if we're trying to deal with an idea we don't like. We don't want to cast it inappropriately in a negative light. Their goal is not to torture babies. Their goal is just to abort the child, to end the pregnancy. And now, does this entail pain for the child? It does, but many would even dispute that. And so the point is, their motive isn't to torture. That's my point. And they're not doing it because it gives them pleasure. That's not the reason they're doing it. They're doing it for some other purpose. Now, neither of those qualifications on their view justifies the view. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying let's go out of our way to be charitable and careful about how we characterize the other view. And but certainly in that particular case, if pressed, I think they'd have to say, and I just wrote a solid ground coming out in July, I think, regarding this, they're going to have to say that abortion does kill an innocent human being. And and then there are people who believe that murder, or at least killing what we would call murder.
Are you making fun of my neighborhood again, Greg?
I'm just resting for a moment.
I apologize, everyone. I live near Major Street.
That's okay. This is there was somebody. I know what's going on, Amy. There was somebody there in L.A. County that was outside of the building and was not wearing a mask. The recent injunction by Mayor Garcetti, you cannot be outside of a building without a mask. Okay, so that must be what the police are involved in doing these days. Anyway, the point was, in answering the question, a more careful way of putting it, excuse me, I think the deeper objective moral principle would be that human life is the kind of life that one needs justification in order to take. One can't kill other human beings for no good reason. All right. Now, what counts as a good reason differs among people. All right. And this is where you have distortions of the moral principle that come in, given people's biases or politics or views of people they don't like. And part of what I wrote is that in this piece that's coming out is that personhood language is an example of that. Well, it's okay to kill innocent human beings as long as they're not persons. And I point out, excuse me, that this has a bitter history going back to, well, a long time before this, but in our memories, to Dred Scott in, 1865, and where blacks in America were considered chattel property. And so freeing a black is stealing from the person who owned him. That was a Supreme Court decision. That was a human being who was relegated to to property and non-person status. Okay, we also have ethnic cleansing of the Muslim Serbs. We have the final solution of the Third Reich, which resulted in the death of 6 million Jews, not counting the others. And so we that fell under that dictum. Homosexuals and gypsies and Slavs, etc. So a political dissident. So there was this concept of Lebensunwertsind Leben, that there is life unworthy of life. This is a distinction that's made. So human beings are the kind of people for which, in order to kill them in a morally sound way, one has to determine that these particular humans are not worthy of living for some reason. Okay, so it turns out when we look more carefully at it, there is a deeper moral principle in play, even with those who appear to be violating the basic principle of it's wrong to kill human beings. Okay, those who are pro-abortion will hold the view, maybe human but not a person. Or they might say, look, there are conflicting rights here, and the baby has rights, the unborn has rights, but the mother has rights that trump the baby's rights, so the baby's life will be forfeit. Okay, notice that whenever there's moral reasoning in play, it's an acknowledgement that there has to be some qualification for an objective moral rule to be trumped by another objective moral rule. So I think in general, those two illustrations do not suggest that there is no objective morality. But there's one other thing. Just because some individuals simply dismiss or deny that certain moral things are true, it doesn't mean they're not. You know, to be universal doesn't mean that there's universal acknowledgement or acceptance. We know the universal, our conviction for one, by simple reflection based on our moral common sense. And if some people don't have moral common sense, that doesn't mean we should be doubting our own. You know, kindness is a virtue. It's not a vice. No, it's not. Kindness is bad. Oh, well, I don't know what's wrong with you, man, but I am not going to be persuaded by your gainsaying my point, okay? Some people still think Elvis and John Kennedy are still alive, all right? All evidence to the contrary. Well, I'm not. You know, some people don't believe in gravity, maybe. I don't know, but that doesn't, you know, they don't float away, right? They're still feet firmly planted on the ground, even though their minds are in midair. But anyway, so
I think what you're describing is key, because what you will find is people will justify. It's not that they're just going around saying, oh, this is – they're just doing it. They're actually trying to make a justification for what they're doing, which proves that they understand the underlying issue
exactly.
Is murder.
That's right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
There is an underlying moral rule that they are justifying breaking because there's a good reason to make it an exception. Now, this is a point, by the way, that C.S. Lewis makes carefully in the beginning of Mere Christianity, in the first chapter, I think, because he's talking about universal morality, the whole question right here. And he said people give it away all the time. They say, well, there are no objective rules, but here is the reason why I'm justified in breaking this one. Well, if there are no objective rules, you don't need any justification for breaking something that doesn't exist. It's a giveaway. It's a tell. And it's the same theme that I've played as I've talked about this ever since the Book of Relativism back in, you know, 22 years ago with Frank Beckwith, is that people don't really believe it. They know better. And even though there may be differences of opinion about how all these things are applied, the conviction that we have that underlying all of this is a moral law that applies to human beings, I can't remember how to end this sentence. Our responses show that we have a deep conviction that there's an underlying moral law that applies to humanity, and that if we want to break one, we better have a good justification.
Mm-hmm. People get math problems wrong all the time. That doesn't mean there isn't a correct answer
Yes.
that they're getting wrong.
Nice job.
All right. So here's a question from John Michael Workington. Is the free will defense compatible with Calvinism / Reformed theology? If so, how?
Well, we probably have a difference of opinion on this. Because I remember we had some conversations where you weren't entirely comfortable with the way I dealt with this in Story of Reality. Here's the way – there's a series of steps here to keep in mind, I think, regarding the question of the problem of evil given that we claim God is good and powerful, okay? And the claim, and I think it was J.L. Mackey that proffered this, the 20th century atheist, is basically that if God was good, he would want to get rid of all evil. And then, of course, the corollary, if he was powerful, he'd be able to. But evil still exists. So this raises a question about either the character of God or the existence of God. Okay, usually the second. It's the way it plays out. And the philosophical response has been that the first premise is just false. It cannot be demonstrated that a good God would prevent all evil. And the reason is it's possible that a good God could have a morally sufficient reason for allowing evil for a time. And you know what? That went through. Most philosophers realized that was a deadly flaw in Mackey's argument. Okay, and maybe it was A.J. Ayer. I get them mixed up, so don't quote me on the person. But it was one of those guys. And the flaw was if we don't know what the justification is, then it doesn't create a lethal contradiction in the Christian view. Now, and that seems to be the case. It does seem to be possible. Okay, well, then what is the reason, the morally sufficient reason? And this is where I conjecture with a form of the free will argument. Different people use this in different ways. I do not think the free will argument works by saying we need to have the freedom to sin or else love isn't love. We need to have the freedom to love God or else our love of God is forced and then it's mechanical and it's just like a recording. I think this is a false dichotomy. For one, God would not be able to love if he didn't have the ability not to love. Or God wouldn't be good freely if he didn't have the ability to sin. Okay, well, God doesn't have the ability to sin, and love is part of his nature, and so those things flow from him, and he doesn't satisfy the could have done otherwise condition, so he doesn't have the freedom, on one definition of freedom, to do those things. So I don't know how those things can apply to us. I don't think that works. However, I think there's another way of arguing, and which is the way I do in it's more nuanced or moves in a little different direction in the Story of Reality. And what I say is that God wanted the kind of creatures that could choose the good, and in choosing the good, become good in their experience. They could develop virtue, and by developing goodness, actual goodness, just the way Jesus did, by the way. Jesus was morally unflawed, but he grew in his obedience by practicing obedience all the time. He grew in developing his virtues in goodness and therefore, you know, became a better and better human being, so to speak. And this is what we're to do by choosing the good rather than the evil. Then we are perfected in virtue, and this increases our virtuous standing. It expands our souls in a certain sense and therefore increases our happiness. And what I say is that the reason that God is happy is because he's good and he wants us to share in his happiness and that we would learn to be good as well. And so this world is a place where we learn to be good, and we learn to be good by making choices of doing good over evil. And some of the virtues that we develop are virtues that could only be developed in a fallen world, like long-suffering, for example, or the virtue of forgiveness. Now, I'm not claiming that's the answer. I could be mistaken on it. To provide a defense regarding God with the problem of evil, all I have to do is argue persuasively that there's a possible morally sufficient reason. And like I said, most philosophers accept that that's the case. And then how you cash that out is may vary from thinker to thinker. And so I've offered one thing that at least minimally has support in Scripture. There may be a lot more things going on, but there's support in Scripture for that, that we have freedom to say no to evil, to grow and develop virtue, to develop virtuous souls that is what results in genuine happiness, and therefore we can share in God's happiness. Eventually, we are going to be perfected in righteousness at the resurrection, but it might be that we are fixed at that level of virtue that we developed in this world, and that's why working to develop virtuous souls in this world has an eternal consequence, and that's why it's important to do so here. And some of my thinking on that comes from J.P. Moreland.
Yeah, I agree with you that I don't think the first version of this that you described works, where they're saying if you people had to be able to sin, otherwise they couldn't have loved or been good or whatever. And I think God does refute that idea, but also the idea of heaven, because in heaven we won't be sinning. So therefore, and there are angels who aren't sinning. So therefore, God could have created us that way. So I don't think it's, I don't think that refutes evil. But I do think that even—
By the way, just to, for clarification's sake, Amy, mm-hmm. are you saying they don't sin because they can't sin, or they don't sin because they won't sin? And there's a split Christian thinking about that.
Well, I think that God will change us so that we will not want to sin.
Okay.
And so I think if that's possible, it's at a later point. I don't see why that wouldn't be possible now.
Sure. I agree with that, by the way. I just wanted to get the clarification.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think you're exactly right that all Christians have to do is give up a possible answer for why God would allow sin. And that refutes the idea that it's impossible for there to be evil and God. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you could offer the free will defense and say, well, here's just one possibility. I don't usually do that just because I don't think it's the right possibility, but just as a logical possibility, it does refute the idea that it's impossible for God to exist in a world where there is sin.
Mm-hmm. Remember, the argument that is offered is an argument based on necessity. If there's evil in the world, then God must not be good of necessity, must not be or not powerful of necessity, or not exist. Okay? And all we're saying is, and the obligation that we have to fulfill is simply to show not necessarily so. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, that's not Amy or my opinion. Those are the philosophically sound stepping stones for dealing with this kind of issue. When you argue from a necessary state of affairs, that then there indicates a conclusion, all one has to do is to show that it is not necessarily so, in order to avoid the force of the conclusion. That's it.
And as it turns out, I think there are a lot of good reasons why God would allow evil in the world, and you mentioned some of them. I think another one is the idea that God wanted to reveal his grace on the cross to us because he wanted us to know him more fully. I mean, that if that is the crowning glory of who God is, his self-giving for the sake of others and his grace, his love, that is revealed the best on the cross. And I think if God is creating people for the purpose of loving and enjoying him and for eternity, that he would want to reveal himself in a way that would allow that to the greatest extent possible. So that's another reason why I think we are in a fallen world currently. Mm-hmm. So, Greg, we're out of time. I can't believe it. That one went really fast.
My. Was that just one question?
No, we got through two questions.
Oh, okay.
And so great. We're not completely losers this time.
Jabberwockies.
But we really appreciate your questions, everyone. You can send those to us through Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. Or if you go to our website and you go to the broadcast page, there is a way for you to send in a question. Just say on there that it's for hashtag STRAsk, but it has to be short. If it's long, then we won't use it. But if it's the length of a tweet, which I believe is 280 characters right now, then we will put it in the queue to consider for future episodes. We are so glad you're listening, and we're so glad you're sending in your questions. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.